Afternoon, Council.
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
Let me say at the outset how much the court appreciates the professionalism and the attention to duty from counsel who is helping us out on this opinion of the justices. If I were to forget to thank you because I'm so absorbed in your argument later, I thought I'd better do it at the outset. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors. That's very much appreciated. May it please the court, Delaware is in the midst of an unprecedented budget crisis. As is well known, its estimated budget deficit has now swelled to approximately $800 million. But Delaware has a unique opportunity to help it solve that crisis because it's only one of four states and the only state east of the Rocky Mountains that has the ability to raise funds from a sports lottery. That's the context in which Governor Markell submitted a letter to you on March 19th requesting your opinion concerning an issue that touches upon the constitutionality of Article 2, Section 17A. Now, since then, and as everyone knows, and I think equally aware of the urgency of the state situation, the General Assembly has passed legislation implementing that proposal by overwhelming majorities, a 30-4 vote in the House and a 17-2 vote in the state Senate. The sports lottery presents a huge opportunity for Delaware. In Nevada, legalized sports betting is a very sophisticated, computerized, intensive industry that has generated hundreds of millions of dollars like clockwork for the state of Nevada. That is a matter of public record. The basic contours of that industry are also a matter of public record. Nevada uses betting lines with a vigorish like those described in the governor's letter and derives most of the revenues in Nevada from legalized gaming on single sporting event bets, also known as straight bets. Parlay bets, wagers that involve two or more elements, could be two or more sporting events, could be two elements within the same sporting event, raise revenue to be sure, but are far secondary to straight bets in terms of their revenue potential. And indeed, in the data we presented to you, and this may not be totally apparent from the briefing for which I apologize, if you looked at the data very carefully, you'd see that parlay betting only accounts for less than 20% of the winnings. Straight bets is where the action is. Yes.
Could you tell us, while you're continuing,
yes,
where you're going with your explanation as far as it relates to the constitutionality?
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor.
You're telling all of this to us for a purpose.
Absolutely, Your Honor. There are three questions, or three types of games that are articulated in the governor's letter. He asked for your opinion on games in terms of a straight bet on a single game event. The total lottery is the second one, which is an over-under bet, which is just another form of a straight bet. And then the third question he asked, or the third type of game he identified in his letter, was parlay games. So the reason I articulated it that way is the first two versions of the games in the March 19th letter from the governor are versions of straight bets.
Well, and the parlay game is the third. Is the governor outlined these three games in his letter.
Yes.
Before we had legislation signed into law.
Yes.
Now that we have the legislation signed into law, the actual games are a decision someone else is going to make, not the governor. Is that correct?
Well, certain features of the games, but I think it's important to take a moment to talk about the statute and exactly what it does that addresses this question. It clearly permits and contemplates, I think the other side readily acknowledges, straight bets. Why do I say that? Because the definition of sports lottery is the outcome of any sporting event, collegiate or professional sporting event, with a carve-out for certain events in Delaware. Second, it mandates to the state lottery director that he has to essentially maximize revenues, which requires, as a practical matter, that you have straight bets to do maximum revenues, while minimizing the risk of loss. How do you minimize the risk of loss? You implement betting lines as articulated in the governor's letter. And thirdly, and I think this is an important feature as well, it actually mandates that the risk manager has to be somebody who's licensed and actually operating a sports book. So those three features, I think, all carry over from the governor's letter to actually implement exactly what I'm articulating, which is essentially what the governor's asking you to do, is to declare as a matter of Delaware constitutional law that the state of Delaware is permitted to run a sports lottery with straight bets, and then parlays follow as a matter of logic, as permitted in Nevada at the current time.
All right, what is our framework for analysis for getting there?
Yes.
How do we approach each of those games that you've identified, assuming we can do so within the concept of an opinion of the justices? in response to the governor's letter. How do we go about analyzing?
Sure. And the frame of my argument today was to try to break this down in two pieces from my perspective, obviously answering whatever you want me to answer in addition. One is, what is the legal standard that should apply to this question? And the second is applying that legal standard specifically to straight bets. I wanted to focus on that. Because parlays, bets, frankly, it's been addressed to a large extent by Judge Stapleton in the 1977 NFL decision. It's really straight bets. It's really the open question. So what I would do is first turn to what's the legal standard, and then applying that directly to straight bets. And if I could proceed in that order, I'll do it very quickly, Your Honor.
Well, and along the way, just tell us how we get to the particular games. I know mm-hmm. they're in the stipulation. I know they're in the governor's letter.
Sure.
You know, one of the things we have to come to grips with, as the Chief Justice said in his question, is how do we get there? And since these games are not in the legislation, and since theoretically the exact games will not be decided by the governor, how are we in a position to give an opinion on these particular games?
All right, let me go directly to that question. I'll come back to the legal standard.
Can you include in that, please, whether these games were discussed before the General Assembly?
Yes, my understanding is, Your Honor, that if you heard the tapes, and I'm making a representation based on what has been told to me because I have not personally listened to the tapes, yes, indeed, straight bets were discussed in the legislative process. And it really is embedded in the principle of maximizing revenues, which is directly in the legislation.
Another thing, Mr. Bouchard, why yes. doesn't the legislation address the legal standard? Why doesn't the legislation, for example, tell us whether Delaware is a pure chance state or not? Why doesn't it tell us that a balance between skill and chance is important in the consideration? Instead, the legislation appears to just delegate all of this to a lottery director who will do we know not what.
Well, I can't tell you why the legislature doesn't have language telling you the standard. I guess they could make that finding. What I can tell you is obviously you're the ultimate arbiter of what that standard is, no matter what they say in a finding.
Until they change the legislation. Well, they don't like the standard that we apply.
Perhaps, Your Honor. Let me deal then, if I could, very quickly what that standard ought to be, then I'll go to the application of that standard. There are four reasons I submit the standard ought to be the dominant factor test. The debate here is between pure chance, the English rule, and the dominant factor test, which is the American rule. The four reasons are, very briefly, every judge that's looked at this question under the Delaware Constitution has determined it should be dominant factor. That's Judge Stapleton in 1977, the NFL decision. That was Justice McNeely in his separate opinion in the Highlight case in 78. In the majority opinion, it expressly did not reach that question. Reason number two.
Is there a policy rationale behind that, or just simply counting the number of cases that have adopted it? Why is the American rule a better rule than the English rule?
There's definitely, I think, a policy rationale embedded in Delaware, which specifically came from Judge Stapleton, who analyzed legislative history of Article II, Section 17A. And in that analysis, what he determined, and this was unique to Delaware, because Judge Stapleton first said, this is the predominant rule in the United States, and indeed it's continued in that trend. But he looked specifically to Delaware and looked at the legislative history and applying the principle of contemporary legislative construction, he noticed that the same legislature that adopted the second leg of the constitutional amendment that created Article II, 17A, also defined the term lottery in the enabling lottery legislation in 1974 to include public gaming or games, a term which he concluded embraced a far wider range of activities potentially than those that were simply based on pure chance. In addition, he noticed, specifically in that legislation, and it continues today in the statute, in Section 29 Del Code 4805B4, that there was the ability of the state lottery director to have wagers that would be based on the outcome of sporting events, and that tie is there. So Judge Stapleton didn't just count noses, although that clearly is the weight and trend of authority. He also looked at the legislative history and answered Your Honor's question. The fourth reason, very quickly, and then I'll move to the application issue, is subsequent legislative enactments. My opposition, fair opposition, pointed out in their brief in a footnote that the term charitable gaming is defined, Your Honor, to include a reference to pure chance, to dominant factor as the test. The legislature did not use the term pure chance, and I think that's relevant because that was a statute implemented in 1983, so it's 6 years after the time period that Article 17 or Article 2, Section 17A had been implemented. And the legislature, already knowing about Judge Stapleton's decision saying it should be dominant factor, already knowing about Justice McNeely's opinion it should be dominant factor, did not use pure chance, but chose dominant factor in the actual language itself. I think it would make no sense, frankly, to have non-parallel provisions in Section 17B of the Constitution, which is what this pertained to. That's the legislation pertained to charitable gaming, which is in Section 17B, and have a different standard in Section 17A. Now, the application issue. I think Your Honor's question, I apologize for diverting a little bit from it, was sort of how do we get there, or what are you expecting us to do? In practical sense, that would be my paraphrase. I think, first of all, because we do have a statute now, and it has the elements that are in the governor's letter for the reasons I've already gone through, that a key point is there's a presumption of constitutionality that attaches to that statute. And indeed, that would be a presumption that would apply in an advisory opinion context, and we cite a decision, 1980 decision, they're all called opinion of the justices, so it's hard to differentiate them, that applies that very principle in the context of giving an advisory opinion. So that's where we start. There's a presumption of constitutionality, and clearly the legislation contemplates straight bets because it says any event, any outcome, single outcome. Then what we do is, I think, respectfully, the right roadmap is to really do the analysis that Justice McNeely did in his separate opinion in the Highline decision. And what did he do? Well, number one, he agreed the dominant factor was the test. Number two, based on statistical information.
But, Mr. Bouchard, we don't get to that part of the question until we answer the first constitutional question, which is the Constitution provides for the gambling to be done by legislation. And we have the legislation, and the constitutional principle at issue is, does this legislation provide a yardstick, to use the word of the cases, or guidance, or has the legislature given up its responsibility, you know, to whoever's going to supervise the gambling?
I think with the respect, Your Honor, I think the guidance that is sufficient for an appropriate delegation of authority to the lottery director is in the legislation the way it is. There is the authorization to implement games that have to be obviously on sporting events, based on sporting events, professional and collegiate. It has a carve out for Delaware games. There has to be the principle, and this is the key core principle, that you're doing it to maximize revenues and minimize risk. And candidly, that's exactly what they do in Nevada. They do this on straight bets, which, again, the sports lottery definition permits.
But is there any other guidance in the legislation besides the two points you've just made?
Well, also the critical guidance of minimizing risk, which is done through a risk manager, which is done through the implementation of betting lines and a vigorish or a commission that's built into it. That is standard industry operating procedure. And you know, with respect, I don't think you could over-dictate to the lottery director exactly how to fulfill that mandate. I mean, you know, what would the legislature do? Say you have to do a two-parlay card, you know, and it has to be an over-under on one side of the bet, and on the other side of the bet, it has to be the outcome of the event. The point is that, and I think this is consistent with delegation principles, you give to the lottery director with that basic mandate the flexibility that's necessary to implement this to fulfill the mandate of maximizing revenues and minimizing risk. And I think that really is in the legislation, totally in the spirit of the governor's letter.
Mr. Bouchard,
yes.
Let's get back to the application of the dominant factor test, which we'll assume for purposes of this case that is adopted as the law. Let's start first with just a game of football, professional
yes.
football. That is a game in which skill is the only factor, isn't that true?
I wouldn't say it's the only factor.
Well, it's
the
certainly
factor.
The dominant factor.
Well, again, it depends how you're analyzing the question. If you're talking about the players on the field.
I'm talking about forgetting gambling.
Right.
That the you know, pitting one football team against the other, whatever the outcome is going to be a matter largely of skill. Is that right?
I would say there is a component of skill in the actual play in the field, and there are many elements of chance in the play in the field as well.
But they don't dominate, do they?
I don't know that I would concede that, Your Honor. I mean, you know, you cannot determine an injury that can happen in game time. You can't determine the mood of the players. You can't determine the weather. There are only six dome stadiums in the NFL, just to sort of put that in context. There are many factors you can't control. I would concede that there is an element, a component of skill in the play on the field itself.
All right. Let's now assume that you and I are betting on the outcome of that game without
yes.
any intermediary setting odds. Is that predominantly a matter of skill or of chance?
With an intermediary placing
out? No intermediary.
I'm sorry?
With no intermediary. It's just you and I making a bet.
I would think in the context of no intermediary, an element of skill can be applied to making that wager. When you have the intermediary placing odds, the entire equation changes. And there are that is, you know, supported by empirical studies, many of which we put in the records. That is supported
Is it fair to say that if one assumes for purposes of argument that the betting on the football game without the intermediary and is basically a game of predominantly skill, that it's the intermediary that sets the odds that converts that game into one predominantly of chance. Is that right?
Well, I wasn't accepting the premise before about it being predominantly skill before the intermediary came along. I said there's a component, but working with the logic, certainly by the time you have the intermediary imposing the lines, it is predominantly at a minimum chance. I think a good argument could be made it's pure chance at that point based on the empirical data.
Well, the involvement of that intermediary is critical to your position. Is that not the case?
That is correct, Your Honor. So let me go back, if I could, briefly to how would we look for, on the governor's behalf, for the affirmative side, what are we looking for an opinion to look like? And I was in the middle of discussing, I believe, Justice McNeely's opinion, because I think really it is the roadmap for that kind of decision. And what he did after looking at the legal standard is he took the statistical information in the context of an advisory opinion that had been provided to him by counsel, information based on 1 month of betting on High Lie and a seven-month a series of data sets from betting on High Lie.
Before you go farther with that, Mr. Bouchard, one of the points you're making by stating that, I assume, is that unlike Judge Stapleton, in effect trying a case in the district court with a significant record that's been built about the facts of how what games are, how they work, how the lottery is actually operating at that time, we can still make a decision here without a factual record that addresses issues of the extent of state control, what's the legal standard, what are the predominant skill, chance, balance given certain events, and how different betting methodologies may affect that balance. You're suggesting to us that just like Justice McNeely, we can do that without a trial record.
Yes. You can clearly, it's pure matter of law what the operative standard is. There should be no question to that. Justice McNeely then concluded in the High Lie case that chance did predominate, and he did it based in an advisory context based on fairly limited statistical information, whereas we have a much deeper record, frankly, than existed in that case. And what is that record? That record, let's start from the premise of the NFL decision. I mean, back then, this sort of more anecdotally, Judge Stapleton observed, you know, the great Jimmy the Greek, 101 out of 126 games that he observed that he picked right. But when you added the betting line, he only went 38 for 126, about a 30% odds. In the 30 years since then, there's been enormous information that's been developed and studied in this industry to support the proposition that this is not any longer a matter of anecdote, but a reality. And I submit the court can take judicial notice of that reality. What does it consist of? Look at the industry first. Billions of dollars are spent in sports gambling every year. There's a very active and deep market that is occurring. The betting occurs largely on very sophisticated computer models. There is a commission that is built in, this is common industry knowledge, to give an edge to the house. As a sheer matter of arithmetic, you need to win 52.4% of the time in order to try even to come out ahead. Now look at the data that we put into the record, publicly available. You can go onto the Nevada Gaming Commission's website, and you'll see the data from the Nevada results. Consistent win percentages in the 5-6% area, which happen to coincide with the expected Commissioner Vigorish. Nevada is a mathematical money generator in this industry precisely because it is predominantly chance. Then consider the studies. We provided about 10 different studies. The other side provided none, not a single study. If there's ever a motivated party in this proceeding, it's the NFL. They've been following this a long time. They brought forward no study to you saying that somebody can beat the system, that skill can really make a difference in the ultimate outcome of betting against the line. We, on the other hand, put in peer-reviewed studies. 9 out of 10 of the studies we put in are peer-reviewed that indicate, I think, two fundamental principles. One is there's an efficient market that exists in sports betting that incorporates available information, and it's highly predictive of the outcome. And two, and most fundamentally, that there's been no system recognized by which one can use skill to consistently beat that system. So I think the record here is much deeper and much richer than what Justice McNeely had to work with. And you can, based on that record, as a matter of judicial notice, make the conclusion or reach the conclusion that straight bets are permissible under Article 2, Section 17A. My rebuttal time I'm eating into, so with the Court's permission, I'll defer at this point.
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
Good afternoon.
I'm going to rest on my briefs except for the Court's questions with respect to all the reasons why the Court simply ought to avoid issuing an opinion in the particular circumstances here, some of which I think are reflected in the questions I've already raised. The control issues, the issue of delegation, and the fact that nothing about the games is in the statute. The one thing I would add is the games are not entitled to a presumption of constitutionality. They never went through the door. They didn't come out the door. They're not in the legislation.
Were they discussed before the General Assembly?
Your Honor, I don't know the answer to that, but they are certainly not part of the duly enacted General Assembly Bill HB 100.
Are you saying you're not going to address the issues of control or delegation?
I will answer the Court's questions, but what I wanted to do was focus on most of what Mr. Bouchard was talking about in terms of these studies and whether laying odds on a game that is one of skill, speed, and endurance converts it somehow into a lottery. I would have thought that would be where I would spend my time, because I think if you go below the surface of what the Court's been offered on the opening, you can see that it's not right, and in fact it proves the opposite.
But to get to that, don't we first have to answer the first two questions, which is that this is a proper delegation, so it's constitutional in that regard, and second, that it is under state control. If it's either not a proper delegation or it's not under state control, then you don't get to the merits.
I think that is correct, Your Honor. I don't have the luxury of knowing what you're going to do with those two issues. I think it clearly is an open-ended delegation. There is nothing in the statute. You can't even give it a presumption of constitutionality with respect to the gambling that the governor is talking about. I think that ends the matter, and I'd be glad to sit down if I thought I could count on that ruling. I also think that the control issue, unless, Your Honor, the Court is going to modify or retreat from the Hilei opinion, which equates control under the Constitution with a lottery director is to operate the lottery and the conclusions there reached, that the control issue is a done deal.
Well, that's a factual matter, isn't it, that we don't have an answer to?
It would be, Your Honor, except that our position certainly is that by appropriate legislation, the enforcement of the gambling exception as well as the gambling ban requires the operational control to be in that legislation, because it's the legislature's responsibility to see to it that it happens that way. And so I would say the absence of both of those things in this statute is fatal, as Justice Holland is suggesting.
Well, so I think Chief Justice Herman and Justice Duffy looked at the Constitution and said control by the state means operation by the state, as distinguished from licensed by the state.
Correct.
So here we have a statute that's licensed by the state.
Yes, if we're going to hire a bookie who is not going to be under state control, who is the critical operation. I don't know what part of this gambling the Court can infer is actually going to be operated by the state. None of it will be. People are going to be licensed and hired. It's all going to be independent contractors and people with licenses. So I'd say, unless the Court is going to walk away from the Hilei majority, that clearly doesn't qualify.
That raises another question. When you say Hilei majority, this is an opinion of the justices, which means each individual justice gives an opinion. It's not an opinion of the Court, nor were the Hilei opinions an opinion of the Court, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. I mean majority in the sense that two of the three justices concurred in that view. This Court is free to issue five opinions that are different from that one, if it chooses. Quickly on Jimmy the Greek, and I really do want to talk about the laying of this line, because if the Court gets through the other issues, this is a dividing line. And I think on the line, the Court can rule in the negative, but it cannot rule in the positive or on the basis of those studies. And I want to come to that. Jimmy the Greek in the NFL, Justice Stapleton, one of the most distinguished jurists our state has ever produced, did look at and acknowledge that Jimmy the Greek, 80% plus of the time in the 1976 season, he got that right. Mr. Bouchard wouldn't concede that a football game is to predominantly speed, skill, and endurance, but he should, because 80% can't be random. And because his line, he says, makes the outcome highly predictive of a football game within a matter of points. That can't be if the game is predominated by chance. It's because there are factors that can be known, that can be weighed up, and sure, lightning can strike. All of life is filled with chance. But mostly you can get it right and you can get it within a few points, according to his own studies. What Judge Stapleton did that led him down the path was he then looked at all the parlays and complicated bets and said Jimmy only would have won 30% of the time. He assumed, of course, he would make all those bets. None of these studies tell you anything about the informed bettor who picks his spots the way the literature suggests, the way the touts suggest. The man going or the woman going to the window to bet is making a judgment. Is the line off? Am I on? Do I bet or don't I bet? Jimmy the Greek would have been smart enough not to make all those bets. We don't know what the outcome would have been.
But you still look at it over the long term.
No, Your Honor, and that's exactly where I differ with my friend. His studies all look at long terms. They're looking at the back end in terms of dividing up the house money, the pool of money, between the winners and the losers. Not the number of winners and losers, but the money that's bet, so that you can take the vigorish and pay the winners with the losers' money. That's the object. He says it works over time, over averages. Those studies, one of them looking at 18 years, 4,600 games, who knows how many millions of bettors. It's aggregate data, aggregate behavior, over a long period of time, and it all averages out, he says. I'll grant him that for purposes of argument. Frankly, they're too complicated for me to decipher, except to know that that's what they're talking about. It's interesting that the one that looked at only one season in 1983, one season's worth, said, you know what, you can devise a strategy that you can win 59% of the time. How can that be if it's dominated by chance?
But don't you statistically have to look at it over the long term? If we pull out a quarter and flip it twice, it comes up heads.
Your Honor, respectfully, no. And the answer is in looking at what the line is. The idea is we set a line and we've created a lottery. But that's not what happens. The line is set and it moves. It moves and fluctuates daily until the game time. Why does it have to move? Mr. Bouchard's argument is, we set a line as the flip of the coin. I go to the window, I'm flipping a coin. That's not what's going on, because even though it's highly predictive and you can get it close, as we know from 1976, you can miss by a lot too. People are making judgments based upon their knowledge and their skill. Is a line maker right or wrong? The smart money in the appendix at A12, the treatise that we both relied on, smart money bets early when the line is the weakest. The line is moved. The bet is sweetened on the other side. Why? Because you didn't make a lottery. People are betting heavy on one side. So the line maker adjusts the line. He makes it sweeter on the other side. People start to bet on the other side. Why? Chance? No. They're making a judgment at the window. Everybody is saying, hey, this is the sweeter bet. And purposefully so, it's a sweeter bet. Because now the line maker is saying, I've tilted the judgments. I can move people's judgments. People are betting in response. He is moving the line in response to the collective judgment of the bettors. He's got the advantage now of knowing what they think. He moves it. So he's definitely moved it now to tilt the cash flow in another direction. That's not a lottery, because now the bets are falling on the other side. Nobody's flipping coins here. What he's saying is, we hope at the end of the day, in the perfect world, on each game, I will have been able to affect people's judgments so that the house winds up okay with the vigorish made, half the money on the winning side, half the money on the losing side, we pay them with the loser's money. It's a moneymaker, he says. Yeah, but that's not what's going on at the window. It doesn't tell you, because over time you can make money. Are the bettors engaged in a lottery? And what I just went through, who flipped the coin? Nobody. Nobody on the field, not the line maker. He's highly skilled, relying on information and judgment. And not the vast majority of bettors who's moving that line around. They are all making judgments about and they don't have to bet for years to make their living that way.
Well, let's assume for a moment that there's some skill element on the part of the bettor, just for the sake of argument, as opposed to skill demonstrated on the field in a sporting event. Isn't there a substantial element of chance that all the factors you've analyzed when you place your bet do, in fact, no pun intended, come into play on the day the game is actually begun? Because you bet at the window when the quarterback is healthy, and then you find out the next day he's been locked up for DUI and he's not going to play at all. But your bet's already – well, maybe that's not a good example. That actually never happens in the NFL, I'm sure. But doesn't chance really distort whatever element of skill you think you bring to the window?
There is an element of chance that's possible on occasion, sometimes, or it wouldn't be gambling. There is chance that enters into the outcome of every NFL game. There's no question about it. But is it the causative factor? And I want to go to that because Mr. Bouchard talks about some skills, some chance. Even under the dominant factor test, as Judge Stapleton put it, it's qualitative. It's not how many pieces of chance enter into it. The question is, at 1285 of his opinion, is it the causative factor? Is it cause the outcome? Or, as another case put it, the Lanuski case that he relied on, is it the controlling element? And Your Honor's right. Of course there's going to be chance. But the line wouldn't work if chance was really causing all of this. The fact that, on average, over time, you don't wind up what we had in the fall of 1976, that the House, if they don't get it that weekend, can get it back on the next weekend, and over a period of years, we can manage the money. It's a hedging operation. It has nothing to do with the betting. But you would not be able to induce the bettors to flow to the other side of the bet if they weren't gambling in the sense that you start with. I think the Giants in six is the better bet. Why? All the same thing that the bookie took into account. They just think he's wrong. That's not a lot.
No, I understand that. But you are taking a chance that the assumptions on which you base your bet will actually be in play on the day of the event.
All gambling assumes that. You assume the horse is still going to be healthy, the jockey is not going to be locked up, etc. There is an element of chance. But by and large, most of the time, the kind of gambling we're talking about, there is not lightning hitting the quarterback in the fourth quarter. It is a remote chance. It is not the causative chance. It is not the chance that works statistically. Statistically, you can induce people to move back and forth because they believe in, and back to Jimmy the Greek.
Well,
80% of the time, the elements that Your Honor is talking about didn't determine the outcome.
Yes.
Maybe 20% of the time it did. We don't know.
Well, he was just picking the winner, not based on a line, right?
But my point is we're starting there, Your Honor, and everybody is doing the same thing. The line maker and the betting public are doing the same thing the line maker is, trying to predict the outcome based upon information at hand, all recognizing that it's a gamble, of course. It's a gamble. It's not like taxes and death. It's a gamble. But it's not a lottery.
So
no one here
test,
is buying a chance.
The litmus test is whether if Jimmy the Greek bets on it, then it must be a game of skill. And
no.
Otherwise, it's a game of chance.
No, Your Honor. My only point is I picked up on Mr. Bouchard's use of Jimmy the Greek. What I'm suggesting is, and if you look at A12 and the treatise that talks about how the gambling works, everybody knows the line's going to move, and the pros tend to bet early because they are engaged in a game of skill. They are matching wits with the odds maker. That's what happened in 1976. The state line maker set the line way wrong. It didn't take long for people to recognize that and start to bet heavily, and they were not able to manage the line in time to avoid a big loss. My point is the court ought to be looking at the nature of the gambling, not the control mechanism at the back end, how the house protects itself. Are people – look at it historically. I mean, a lottery is pulling lots out of a hat. It's a gamble based upon pure chance built into the game itself. We're looking at a football game, which I think has to be conceded. Far more often than not is determined by the skill on the field. Chance enters into it, I agree, unless there is no meaning to the ban on sports gambling. There's a difference. You can't convert the football game into pulling lots or even a game that is a lot like pulling lots by simply making it a harder judgment. And that's all the line maker's doing. He's saying, I'm making it more difficult now, Jimmy. And what I'm suggesting, Your Honors, the bettors don't bet when it's so difficult that they can't see a break. Some will. Their Eagles fans are going to bet the Eagles who will do that. But that's figured into the line. The hometown advantage, home field is built into the line. The home team gets dinged 3 points for that. That's all built into the line. But it's all known factors that people judge. This is not buying a lottery ticket. Mr. Bouchard said in his brief, the only decision the bettor makes is whether to bet or not. Well, that's true in a lottery. Am I going to take a chance or not? But that's not what's happening here, or the line wouldn't work. He wouldn't be able to move people's bets.
If all known factors are built into the line, what's left but chance?
And that's what Mr. Bouchard says. Well, the chance is whether the guy who's built it into the line is right. And there are people who disagree because they've got their own data. They're already looking at their own stuff. And they're saying, I don't think he's right. And that happens. We know that happens because of 1976. Let me put it another way. If the line maker built all the information into the line and set the line, he wouldn't need to move it. Right? If the window opens on Wednesday and the game is on Sunday, for those days, he would just sit back. Even if the money was flowing to one side, he'd sit back because he knows it's random, it's a toss of the coin, the money's going to even out. But it doesn't. He manipulates it. He moves people's judgment. It's not one bet. Every time the line moves, the odds change, everybody's making a new bet. It's a new bet. Every time the line changes, people are making new judgments.
Is that because there's new information?
No, it's because the line maker wants to move people's judgment to the other side of the bet because he wants to wind up with half. The things are unrelated. All he's doing is managing the money so the house is okay. It doesn't tell you anything about what's going on at the betting window. You are inducing people to make a different judgment. If anybody was just buying a chance, he wouldn't be able to accomplish that as consistently as he can. That's why I say, if you really follow what happens here, it proves the opposite of Mr. Bouchard's proposition. Nobody's flipping a coin at any point, and the odds, the flow of cash is never particularly even at any point. When does the lottery actually occur? It doesn't. It just doesn't. And if the court keeps track of the historical distinction here and gives it any credit, common sense tells you that just because you make it harder to win the bet doesn't mean you're betting on something else. It just doesn't. If there are questions, I can stop there. And let me just say something about the stats. We didn't run out and look for a bunch of different stats for the reasons I've just articulated, because I think if what he's saying is the house can over time manage its money so it's okay, and that's the distinguishing feature of a lottery, then any kind of organized gambling for profit is going to be a lottery. And you might as well put a magic marker to the constitutional ban in that sentence that says all forms of gambling except.
It's a real problem. If I could summarize your argument, what you're saying is that having betting with a line doesn't make the game a lottery.
Correct. And the fact that the line over time, on average, in the aggregate, works proves that point. Proves that point. But one, just a refinement on the commentary on the stats, the articles. He says that they prove that you cannot consistently win over time with a system. But that's consistently. That assumes people are betting all the time. Doesn't tell you whether I win or lose any year. We're in one bet. Where I think you need to be looking. What are the bettors doing? And it's talking about a system. That is, you can't sort of get a computer program that plugs in all these factors because lightning does strike. You've got to make a judgment, as we suggest in our brief, citing A12 of the appendix. You've got to pick your spots. You got to decide when the line maker's wrong. And they have offered the court nothing on that point. Well, let me take that back. The one study that for one season in 83 says you could actually devise a system and win nearly 60% of the time. So even what they've proffered is mixed. You're just looking in the wrong place. This is a hedging operation that they're looking at. It's not telling you what the bettors are doing. None of them are flipping coins. Just because half of the folks over a year wind up losing, you just don't know just don't know what anyone better or said or better they're doing or whether they're doing well.
Well, before you sit down, although it is well addressed in your brief, any last word on whether this issue is appropriately teed up at this point for an opinion of the justices now that the legislation is passed?
Your Honor, this is going to be the kind of thing lawyers say. It could be teed up for a no. It is not and cannot be on this record with this legislation teed up for a yes. That would be my position for the reasons reflected in the briefs. I think you can pick any one of the control, delegation, or this principle, because this is really the proposition that the use of a line turns a what would otherwise be illegal betting in this state into a lottery. I think you can say no to that, that it doesn't do it. But I don't think you can say yes because you don't have the other side of the statistics.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. On behalf of the National Football League, I join in Mr. Ashby's arguments. I wish to use my limited time to make three related points in furtherance of those arguments, and perhaps I can simplify things a little bit. First, it's well settled that opinions of the justices are limited to questions of law, and there is no basis for fact-finding in this proceeding. There are many cases that say that. The opinion of the justices from 1978, reported at 382 Atlantic 2nd, 1364, is a prime example of that. Second, there are significant factual disputes about the central question that Your Honors are being asked to opine on, namely, if the American rule is the appropriate rule here, whether the proposed sports betting scheme is predominantly a game of chance or whether it involves significant elements of skill. I'll talk further about that in a moment. But such factual questions can only be resolved in a trial court upon an evidentiary record, just as Justice Stapleton had 6 days of evidence in his proceeding in 1976. Obviously, we have no such record here. Third, a request for an opinion is procedurally improper at this point. The legislation in question has already been enacted. If the state wants to file a declaratory judgment action seeking an opinion in the trial court as to its validity, it can do that. Alternatively, it can wait to see if there's a legal challenge to the statute. I think that it may not have such a long wait, but those are future events. The central undetermined fact issue is whether a sports lottery or sports betting scheme proposed in the legislation will be a game of chance, in which case it may be a permissible lottery, or whether it's a game of skill, in which case it's barred by the Delaware Constitution. As you've already observed, since we don't know what games will ultimately be approved by the Lottery Commission, Your Honors are at a great disadvantage in deciding that. But assuming that Mr. Bouchard is correct and there'll be single-game betting on NFL games, let's address that. There is no evidentiary record on this critical issue, none whatsoever. Instead, the proponents of the affirmative position have cited numerous scholarly articles. Those articles do not establish that successfully beating the point spread is a result of luck. In fact, they appear to establish precisely the opposite. For example, the 2004 study by William Dare and Stephen Holland, cited by the affirmative position, reported a win percentage of 55.6% over 374 games. It's at page 14 of the 2004 study. The article by Rodney Paul and Andrew Weisbach reported on a strategy that was, to quote their words from their article, quote, both a violation of efficient markets and profitable. That's at page 362 of the study that the affirmative position cites. The article by Stephen Safra, cited by the affirmative position, identified something that Mr. Safra labeled as a mean regression effect and reported as follows, quote, simple wagering strategies based on the mean reversion effect could potentially be profitable. That's at page 501. The article by Zuber, Gander, and Bowers, also relied on by the affirmative position, reported that, quote, since we can show that profitable gambling opportunities exist, speculative inefficiencies appear to be present in this market, close quote. That's at page 805. Yet the proponents of the affirmative position ask this court to accept exactly the opposite position. The market is efficient, no profitable opportunities exist, and they ask the court to do so without holding an evidentiary hearing on the basis of the very articles which I have just quoted, which in many instances say just the opposite.
Are you arguing there's no element of chance involved?
No, obviously a football isn't round. It's a football shape, and it bounces funny sometimes. So there is some chance involved. But when people have winning percentages of 55% to 60%, which is what study after study has shown, that's not the result of luck. If I flip a fair coin, it's going to come up heads 50% over time, tails 50% of the time. And I could get 100 MIT PhDs with 1,000 computers, and their winning percentage over time is going to be 50%. Here, winning percentages over 55% up to 60% are possible. That's not luck. That's skill.
Do you agree that on any given Sunday, any one NFL team can beat any other NFL team?
I'm not sure. I'll invoke the Detroit Lions exception. But as a general proposition, yes. My time is up unless Your Honors have further questions.
I have one question. You mentioned the possibility in our future of an actual trial where facts would be found to address the issues that you say are unanswered by the facts before us. Let's assume that future event takes place in a court that doesn't have the last word on Delaware law, yet in the interim we've opined as justices on what we believe to be Delaware law on some of the triable issues. How does that play out?
Well, I think any court would give appropriate deference to the opinions of the justices, but there may be, as somebody said previously, five different opinions. I don't believe those opinions are dispositive, and there is a federal statute involved that's obviously not before this court, and I don't know how a federal judge would treat an opinion of the justices, and I guess that would be up to a federal judge if it were in federal court. Similarly, if it were in state court, I think the judge before it was the judge whom it was before would obviously have to give weight to the opinion of the justices, but it would either be persuasive or it wouldn't.
Thank you.
I have one more question. You alluded to the fact that the case started out, this question for the justices started out before the law was passed by both houses or signed by the governor, and you suggested that now that it's been passed and signed by the governor, that it would not be appropriate for the justices to render an opinion. I'd like you to just elaborate on that thought.
My understanding of the advisory opinion is, and I may be wrong, but I believe that when there is legislation that's been enacted by the legislature but not yet signed by the governor could ask the opinion of the justices to determine the constitutionality of the and the legality of the statute. Once the governor has acted, there's nothing further for the governor to do at this point. I mean, he's chosen to sign this into law. It is now the law of the state of Delaware.
You can tell the lottery director.
I suppose he can, but that gets to a different question, because then what they're really doing is they're really, and we covered this in our brief, they're really trying to delegate to this court which specific games are going to be permissible and which aren't. If you have a 7-team parlay, that will be game of chance and you can do that, but if you have a straight bet, that's a 60% odds of winning, so you can't do that. I think that's an impermissible delegation and frankly, a separation of powers problem that we've addressed in our brief.
One last question along those lines. One could think that even though the governor has signed the legislation, there's a substantial amount of expense and work to be done as the legislation is implemented. So isn't it arguable that he is prudently asking a question of us about the efficacy of having signed that statute given all that will have to be implemented down the road, the expense and the time, et cetera, the amount or the extent to which projections of this income affects this year's budget, and a number of practical reasons why he's asking the question. Do we ignore all those and say, because you've signed the legislation, it isn't what we've ever done before, therefore we'll give you no opinion today? Is that what?
I think that is an option that the court has. Your Honor phrased the question, is it arguable that this is a prudent thing for the government to do?
I was hedging my bet by saying, isn't it arguable?
Fair enough. And I will say, yes, it is arguable, absolutely. But I think the more appropriate course would be to file a declaratory judgment action so that this could be decided on a record, or wait for someone to challenge, which would result in a similar evidentiary record that would allow this to be decided appropriately and the fact questions to be determined.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to begin with the last point first, Your Honor, you just mentioned, which is indeed there is precedent for the court to provide advisory opinions even after a statute has been enacted and the law signed by the governor and enacted. The Hilai opinions presented just that circumstance. Governor DuPont had signed the bill. Opinions were provided. There's another citation we have in our brief, similarly with Governor DuPont in 1980 signing a bill, and precisely for the reasons you've identified, which is the governor is looking for guidance here. They need to make decisions about hiring people, structuring these games, entering contracts with vendors. The licensees, the casinos that will be the locations for these, have to make decisions about investigating resources. And very fundamentally, there have to be decisions about this upcoming budget and whether or not they can close the deficit for fiscal year 2010. But certainly have the authority, and I think that ultimately was conceded by Mr. Nackbar on that point. Issue of state control, which was raised by Justice Holland, I think, during a question to Mr. Ashby. I think that it's important to keep in mind this statute functionally operates the same way by giving the same level of authority to the state lottery director that he has to operate the traditional lottery and the video lottery, which they've been doing now well over 15 years. The games or the machines are owned or leased by the state. They're in locations licensed by the state. All the flow of funds is controlled by the state. Indeed, if this weren't deemed to be state control, I think you'd be effectively saying many things in the state of Delaware are not under state control. It would have very unintended consequences. The only particular, the NFL makes no issue of state control. The only particular in the legislation that's questioned on state control in the opposition's brief is the mandate that there be a risk manager, and it may not be somebody who's employed by the state of Delaware. That's the only specific contention on state control, really, when you boil down the briefs. That happens all the time.
But there's a contract between the state and that person.
Absolutely, and that's the point. The state all the time contracts with people, and the state reserves the power to hire or fire that person. There was a reference to a Rhode Island decision in the opposition's brief suggesting that this is an impermissible aspect that, or would make this impermissible. There wouldn't be state control. And that was the Rhode Island case. In Rhode Island, the Narragansett tribe went out and hired vendors to run its casinos. And the court drew a very careful distinction. It said, well, having the power to veto is not enough for state control. But the clear implication was if you can hire and fire yourself directly, that's adequate for state operational control. So I really don't think we have an issue on state control. So let me get into some of the weeds of the issues that we heard in terms of the issue of chance and the element of skill that the other side is trying to argue exists here. And I'll just try to go through the specifics that were raised. First, the issue of 1976, that experience was raised. Well, the whole key reason, and this is conceded, it's right in the opposition's brief, the 1976 presented sort of an interesting situation, is because Delaware for a particular week deviated from the standard industry lines. That's right in the opposition's brief. And the whole premise of this legislation, this program, is that it will follow in accordance with industry lines. That's the reason you have a risk manager, to make sure it does adhere to industry lines. Now, we also heard a lot of, you know, hay about some of the studies. You can pick a sentence out of any study, of course, and without taking the entire context, and make it look like it's saying something different than, you know, somebody else may be articulating. But let me take one example. I can't do them all in the time I have. It's the only one that was actually discussed in the NFL's brief. It's the Zuber study from 1984, which they mentioned as saying, showing you can win 59% of the time. That study, excuse me, was 1985. That study was actually refuted 3 years later in the Sauer study that we presented to you, because what Zuber did is he created this model, this algorithm based on interceptions, fumbles, all of these things. And this was sort of early in the era of sports betting with computer technology. And he came up with that 59% win rate for half of the 1983 season. And then Sauer came along, applied that same model to 2 full years of data, and came up with a 38% winning percentage. I can't go through them all with you, but
why
the point...
Why don't these conflicts in the studies create a factual issue requiring a trial?
I don't think they do, Your Honor, because I really don't think fundamentally there is a conflict in the studies. I think the overwhelming indication in the studies is you really can't beat the system. That's fundamentally what the studies are saying. There is nobody that can say to you out there, I know how you can beat the system. What did the opposition brief cite? Not a study. What did they cite? They cited how-to books, which I spent some time on Amazon.com, you know, gathering up so I could look through them. These are books by people who want to convince you can beat the line so that they can sell you a book. But these are not people that know how to beat the line, and you can look through them all. I encourage anybody to do it. You will not see a formula, just as you won't see a formula for people who write how-to books on how to beat the video lottery or how to beat slot machines. I mean, you can get how-to books on anything, but we really don't have empirical data from the other side saying you really can win. My time is up. I have more to say, but, Your Honor, I think I'm concluded.
Thank you very much, counsel, for a very interesting and intriguing argument, to say the least. We'll take the case under advisement, and we will act as quickly as humanly possible on the argument.
Thank you.
Adjourn.
Hearing, hearing, hearing. I'm going to turn to the Supreme Court of the State of Delaware. They now depart. They go to